the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh, oh my goodness! Oh.
They have to get it. No timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
The inbound to Dozier from half court. The shot is no good, and the Dogs will walk into the national championship game for the first time in school history.
One more free throw for Joel Berry. It is up, and it is
no good. Rebound Meeks kicks it to Pinson, and the Heels survive. Theo Pinson throws it high in the air, and redemption is just one win away for North Carolina.
Welcome to our national championship preview edition of Courtside with Cats and Coach G. I'm Andy Katz along with Seth Beamery. Those calls courtesy of the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. We are just hours away from a national championship game between 2-1 seeds, Gonzaga and North Carolina. You can call Cinderella if you want, but you'd be wrong because Gonzaga is a national power now, and they got a chance to win their first national championship as they take on North Carolina. But, Seth, before we preview that matchup, let's look back at an epic Saturday night because it was a great atmosphere. It may not have been a buzzer beater like we had in the women's game, but certainly they came down the last couple of possessions. Let's deal with the first game first, Gonzaga beating South Carolina. They looked very impressive getting out to a 14-point lead, but then what went awry when South Carolina went on a 16-0 run to take the lead?
You know, in a lot of ways, Andy, it was like three different games. And what went awry is when South Carolina came out of halftime, they got back to being who they are and stayed within their personnel. They were much more aggressive. They attacked defensively. They were more physical. They put the ball on the floor. They played downhill. They just were a different basketball team. And in a lot of ways, I say that coaching on an island was different and much more difficult for South Carolina and then it was for Gonzaga. And what I mean by that, Andy, is when you think about Frank Martin and the way he coaches, he is engaged with his team every single possession. He's engaged with his staff. He's engaged with the guys on the bench. They play off of his passion. When you coach in the NCAA tournament in the Final Four, you're on an island because that court is raised. And when you're raised, you're away from your team. You're away from your assistant coaches. When was the last time you ever saw Frank Martin coach sitting on a stool? That's not who he is. But when they came out after that halftime, they were back to being who they were. Having said that, we always talk coming into the tournament about game pressure. How is Gonzaga going to handle game pressure? And with game pressure, Mark Few calls a timeout. Collins makes that three that was a little bit lucky, goes up in the air, comes back down again. Yeah. They go inside to Karnowski, two possessions in a row. They score it, and the game is basically over. So you got to give South Carolina credit for that 16-0 run, but you've also got to give Gonzaga credit for the resiliency and dealing with the game pressure with so much on the line, how they executed offensively and defensively down the stretch.
What I loved about it was a great team win and showed the depth of this team where you had really everyone that contributed, whether it's Karnowski coming back from getting raked across the face and obviously being a factor. You mentioned Collins, who ended up with a double-double and clearly was extremely effective. Jordan Matthews came in and made a big shot. Nigel Williams-Goss was sensational. Silas Melson, Josh Perkins, they all made contributions. Jonathan Williams. And then even Killian Tilly at the end, you know, he had to make two huge free throws in a pressure situation for a freshman who doesn't get a lot of minutes. What did you think of the balance from Gonzaga sort of on display in holding off South Carolina's comeback?
To me, that's who they are. I mean, look, Nigel Williams-Goss is the constant, but they've got enough versatility. We've been talking about versatility all season. And part of that versatility is on any given night, a different guy can step up. Jordan Matthews got him going early. South Carolina tried to dig on the post. He caught the ball when Karnowski relocated the ball. He knocked down threes. Collins was absolutely phenomenal when Karnowski goes down with the injury. They go into him. He's patient. He scores. But it was on the defensive end with the six block shots.
Oh, yeah.
And then execution under pressure. Think about the execution. Mark Few giving the foul. Why? Because that's what they do. That's their philosophy. And for his team to execute that, execution is free throw blockout. Execution is also how do you give a foul. We've seen fouls at the end of games this year in the NCAA tournament where it's been a flagrant one. But what does Gonzaga do? They give the foul. They're going to the for the ball. They're doing it at the proper time. And then Tilly, a freshman, plays only 7 minutes, calm, collected. Viva la France. He knocks down the free throws.
One last thing on this game. The high-low with Collins and Karnowski. How much did you love that play?
Well, I mean, you're talking about a great passer and two guys with great hands. Again, Mark Few has his team so locked in and so understanding of what they have to do. And post-to-post passing is difficult. You know, Everett says, well, we'll just go high-low. Most times when you go high-low, the ball goes to the high post. It swings, and they make one more pass, and then you get an angle to feed the ball as the post player searches. To actually throw that pass, that's hours and hours of practice and two players being on the same page coordinated. So Mark's just done a great job. I mean, it's fun watching this team play.
AP National Coach of the Year. All right, the night game. North Carolina holds off Oregon. And there were stretches there where it looked like North Carolina was going to run away with the game. Oregon makes a great dash toward the end, although they really struggled on threes in the second half, 3 of 18. And then four straight missed free throws. I don't know if I've ever seen a game of this magnitude come down to that, where there's multiple chances for a team to come back, at least have a chance to either tie or win the game. You know, after the game, Jordan Bell is in tears. He can't get off the court because he had a great game, double figures and rebounds, but he just couldn't get that one rebound. But let's go back to the first set of missed free throws, the tap back out by Theo Pinson. You know, I don't know how often that is taught or it's practiced, but it was a great basketball play by Pinson. What'd you think?
When you play against North Carolina, there are certain things you have to know that are going to happen during the course of the game. Dead ball, side out of bounds, after a free throw, there's a good chance they're going to scramble and trap you. And on every free throw situation, they're going to wedge rebound, and if they can't grab it, they're going to back tap it. And when you're preparing for Carolina, you're covering that from your first practice in preparation. You're showing it to your team in video. And it's so unfortunate because Jordan Bell was absolutely terrific. But that is something that you know they're trying to do. They put the two other offensive players, the free throws at the line, and the two other players that are not in the block area to try to rebound. They're on either side of the foul lane outside the three-point line. And that rebounder is told on the second spot, you wedge and push that defender underneath the basket, and if you can't grab it, you back tap it. And they did it twice, and it was pure Carolina. But that game had a bunch of personalities. Oregon comes out early. They go matchup zone. They distort the tempo and the rhythm of the game. They're in pretty good shape. They're moving the ball pretty well. And then all of a sudden, Carolina figures out the zone. They get out in transition. Kennedy Meeks is phenomenal. They establish him. He goes 11 for 12 from the paint. I mean, he was terrific. And then Carolina's second half, I thought they were better. Think about this. Oregon had 7 assists for the whole game. That's not reflective of how they needed to play if they were going to beat Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious. What did you think of their offensive rhythm? Because it seemed disjointed at times throughout the course of the game.
He was really out of character. I mean, Dana Altman is an offensive savant. He's such a terrific offensive coach. They played more one-on-one, played more on the bounce, played more off dribble handoffs, didn't get in the flow. They didn't attack in transition. It was some forced drive into size. And let's give Carolina their defense some credit, though. I thought Carolina defensively was really good. That's what kept them in the game in the first half.
And Kennedy Meeks misses the free throws, but then he gets the huge rebound at the end of that basketball game, so he sort of avenged himself. And it's funny, when I spent some time, and this is not in the conversation, but I'll just add this, at on Sunday with Roy Williams, and I said, how did that last minute of the Oregon game make you feel? He said, mad. I was mad, you know, because of the way it all played out. You know, what'd you think of the coaching that Roy did in terms of that game and sort of getting through to the national championship game for the second year in a row?
I think he's done a great job the whole tournament. I mean, look, he had a massage getting Joel Berry in and out of the game. Berry was 2 for 14 from the field. But don't underestimate his leadership. P. People do not understand just being on the court. He makes Justin Jackson better. He makes Kennedy Meeks better. He makes Theo Pinson better because they look to him. But, you know, Coach Williams, hey, he decided not to call that timeout when Oregon made that run. That's who he is. That's what they do, and they responded. So, you know, Nate Britt gave him great minutes in the first half. I thought that was huge. His empowerment of the of his team, everyone goes into that game expecting to contribute. And to me, that's really good coaching.
All right, Seth. So on Sunday, I had a chance to sit down with both head coaches playing the national championship game. So when we come back after a short break, you'll hear from North Carolina Hall of Fame head coach Roy Williams. Welcome back to Courtside with Cats and Coach G on the eve of the national championship game here in Glendale, Arizona. Now here's my Sunday conversation with North Carolina Hall of Fame head coach Roy Williams.
You've said how much the players have looked at the Villanova game as motivation. How much have you thought about that loss?
You know, it's surprising to everybody, but it's the truth. I really haven't. I've never watched the tape. That night in the locker room was the most difficult moment I've ever had as a coach because I felt so inadequate. There was nothing I could say that made it any better. And so I chose at that time to talk about letting use this as fuel and motivation to work harder. The first 36 hours was the most difficult of over any loss for sure. But after that, I didn't want to dwell on that because I thought those kids had a heck of a year.
What has to go right for North Carolina to beat Gonzaga on Monday night?
Well, the simple things, we can always say more of our shots need to go in. You know, we shot it terribly against Oregon. We need to shoot the ball better. And then the other thing, I think they're more sound defensively than we are. So we've got to have a great defensive game.
What do you respect so much about the way Mark Few carries himself and the Gonzaga program?
He's a worker. He's relentless. He's tireless. I love people that have that kind of work ethic. He wants to coach good kids. He wants to help kids. He cares about them, not just how many points or rebounds they get. And this is, to me, the ultimate compliment. I would love for my son or my grandsons to play for Mark Few.
When you think back to everything that's happened since you last won a national championship, how difficult has this journey been to get to this point?
You know, Andy, it's something because it seems like it was 50 years ago in 2009, and my math's pretty good, it was 8 years ago, but it does. It's so many things have happened, and so many, as you say, personal things. Losing Coach Smith, Coach Guthrie's my best friend in town. Three knee surgeries, thought I had cancer for 24 days. And so the one thing is I do operate every day just trying to do the best I can. It's corny and old-fashioned, but that really is the way I do it. This has been a special group, and the kids that I've had at North Carolina the last 3 or 4 years while the junk has been going on is what's kept me in coaching, because the other stuff made me want to quit. But coaching those kids every day was really something.
And now here's my Sunday conversation with Gonzaga head coach Mark Few.
When do you think this program shed the label Cinderella?
Obviously, like, my perception of it has been different than, you know, general Joe Public's or even the media at times and all that. I felt like after we went Elite Eight and then immediately followed it up with back-to-back Sweet 16s, that's Elite Eight, Sweet 16, Sweet 16, we were done with the Cinderella thing, you know, and certainly coaching in games where we were, you know, favored to win and expected to win, and the expectation was us to move to the second weekend or beyond. I don't know how you can call somebody Cinderella on this end or mid-major, but yeah, expect them to get, you know, to a Final Four and do this and that. So I always felt like, you know, that was a little bit frustrating back when I used to care about what people said.
So if one thing really has to go well for Gonzaga to win the national championship against North Carolina, what is it?
We got to win the Battle of the Glass. I mean, we've got to look back on this thing and say, hey, we did a great job. Defensive rebounding against these guys. We checked them off. We rebounded with numbers. If you were to pick just one thing, right behind that would be our transition defense. We've got to sprint back and get defensive numbers. If we don't have a legitimate chance to secure the ball, you know, on an offensive rebound, we've got to sprint back and limit their transition points.
If you win the title, when you hug Marcy, your wife, four kids, your parents, what do you think those hugs will feel like if you get to that moment?
Oh, it'll just be surreal. It'll literally be like you're, you know, I don't know, up on a cloud. The families, the wives of coaches, they get it. They didn't have a choice in this, really, but they've had to take it on in their lives and deal with it, and the public persona and all that, and people talking bad about their dad, or, you know, my kids are friends with all the guys on the team and all that. So, you know, if you ever get to that point, if we do tomorrow, to be able to do that would be, I mean, it'd be the greatest feeling in the world.
All right, Seth, let's look ahead to tonight's national championship game between Gonzaga and North Carolina. Three keys. I'm going to give you three. Let's start number one. What has to happen for North Carolina to win?
They've got to continue their dominance in the paint and on the backboards. I mean, if you think about it in the NCAA tournament, against NCAA teams, Carolina's 37 points in the paint, 15.5 points in second chance points. All right, their rebound differential is 10.1. For Carolina to win this game, they've got to maintain those numbers because that's who they are and how they win. So I think the first thing they've got to do is win the battle of the backboards in the paint.
So that's exactly what Gonzaga head coach Mark Few told me. They've got to rebound. But he also said they can't have, you know, live ball turnovers. They got to watch their transition defense. And then finally, he said, Justin Jackson. So, Seth, how does Gonzaga handle Justin Jackson?
You know, when I think of them handling Justin Jackson, they don't have a great matchup. So what do they do against South Carolina at times? They went some zone. They just watched Oregon play zone and own the tempo and rhythm of the game. Do not be surprised to see Gonzaga play 40%, 50% zone to keep Jackson out of the lane. That's that hybrid small forward that I've said for the last 2 months is the one concern I have for this team. So try to keep them basically out of rhythm by changing defenses, keeping them off balance, and if they rebound the ball, they can keep them out of transition. So I think that's going to be the key. I think that, you know, their ability to defend Jackson, their ability to rebound the basketball, and then they must, Gonzaga, establish their low post game. Play through Karnowski, play through Collins, force Carolina to react to them defensively.
Nigel Williams-Goss has been sensational throughout the course of the season and this tournament. When I talked to him on Sunday, you know, I asked him what has changed since he transferred from Washington. He says poise. He's much more poised than he was with the Huskies. I also asked him how to describe himself. He says competitive, and Mark Few said he's a winner. How would you describe what you've seen from Nigel Williams-Goss in this tournament and this season?
I think they've done a great job of describing themselves. I mean, he's physical, he's tough, he's a winner, extremely competitive, and I think the last word I would use is confident. He wants the ball at the end of the game. And the other word I would use is chip. When you transfer, you have a chip on your shoulder. You have a motivation and a cause to show people basically who you are and that you left for a reason. And just because they were struggling a little bit at Washington, it wasn't him, because it didn't reflect kind of his competitive spirit. And I think a chip, composure, competitive, and tough. That's how I would describe Nigel Williams-Goss.
And as for Carolina, Joel Berry did not practice on Sunday because of his nagging ankle injuries. What does he have to do tonight to make a difference?
He's got to lead. He's got to lead. He's got to be a guy that others can look to when the game comes close, when they're struggling offensively. I think they're going to match him up in Jordan Matthews, not on the ball with Nigel Williams-Goss. That would put too much pressure on his ankle and wear him down. They need him fresh. They need him 35 minutes. They need his leadership. Yep, he needs to knock down some open jumpers, especially if Gonzaga goes zone, but they need his leadership to me, and I think that's where it starts. Defensively, if he's matched up with Matthews, he's got to locate him in transition, run him off the three-point line. To me, Joel Berry's all about intangibles. He's about toughness. He's about competitive spirit, and he's about others following him. So, to me, that's what he's got to do tonight.
And Roy Williams said on Sunday that Isaiah Hicks' hamstring should be fine. Shemek Karnowski, after getting raked across the face, he's good to go. He played obviously very well in the second half. As for Nigel Williams-Goss, he's got a nasty floor burn from when he dove across the floor. He said, if anything, you'll have to tape it.
Great dive,
his ankle sore from tweaking
dive.
It. Oh, it was great. And but he said he'll be ready to go. Of course, he's not going to be limited in any form tonight. All right, lastly on this game, Seth, if there's an X factor, a glue guy on each team, who will it be that you think could make a difference?
I think it's the two bigs that come off the bench. I think it's Tony Bradley and Zach Collins. I think the winner of that battle could really kind of impact the game. Collins was so good against South Carolina. We've seen Bradley. Now, doesn't seem like he gets fatigued a little bit, but we've seen Bradley. He gets to the offensive glass. He gets him some easy baskets. He blocks a shot. He can catch it in the middle of that zone, face up, and knock down a 12, 15-footer. So I think those two guys that come off the bench, I think those two are going to play a pivotal role in this game.
All right, so look, I'm going to go first. I'm picking the Zags. I picked them at the beginning of the tournament. They're right there in the championship game. I'm going Gonzaga, first national championship tonight here in Glendale, Arizona.
What, did Feely walk you around and save you from a rattlesnake or something? I mean, I know that you're walking in the mountains. By the way, you guys talked about, like, you were just spending the day, you know, in that trail up in the mountains with Feely. I didn't see you go anywhere. You stood, you were dressed like you were out there playing tennis with a polo shirt and shorts. I mean, you look like you were just, you know, walking, like, to the country club. Feely's in his, like, you know, fishing gear. A little fraudulent. We're walking in. No. You had a nice scenic shot. I'm not sure you walked anywhere personally.
Well, just my one very quick backstory is Feely wanted to do Camelback. Two problems with that. One, it's a much tougher hike further out. We didn't have the time for that. And realistically, our camera crew, I don't think they could have been backpedaling up Camelback Mountain.
Wait a second. You're throwing it on the camera crew. What about you? How about that? The camera crew right under the bus. But you, like the marathon man you are, I mean, unbelievable. You're killing me. I'm going to go with Carolina. And for the mere fact against, and this is an interesting stat that I had our people look up. I thought it was right. In the 11 games that Gonzaga's played against teams that were in the NCAA tournament, they are -9 in points in the paint. All right. They're -1 in second chance points. This is the one that kills me. Points off turnovers, they're -7. And rebound differential, they're -8. So there's literally a huge difference of their front court productivity, even though they did it against South Carolina, against teams that were in the NCAA tournament. That plays into the strength of North Carolina. And I think that'll be the difference in the game.
All right. So we disagree here at the end. All right, Josh, how about a little student section to wrap it up here in this championship edition?
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, guys, we've got two teams left in this college basketball season. And we have two student section questions today. How about some symmetry there? The first one comes to us from Sean Iske. He's at Sean Iske, and he's been with us all season, and he has this question specifically for you, Seth. He says, given the unique court setup and sight lines at the Final Four, what can coaches do to help players adjust to that?
You know, that's a great question. We talked about that earlier. I think it is so difficult. You've got to have your guys stay in the present. I think it's so difficult to coach your team twice a year on a stage with their limited ability to communicate and really kind of connect with your staff and your team. In terms of the sight lines, I don't think you have you don't bring it up with your team. You know, it's kind of like the old Hoosiers thing. You go out there, you measure the basket. This is what it is. You know the dimensions of the court. You know, when you were a kid growing up, you'd play anywhere, indoors, outdoors, rain, snow, sunshine, cloudy. Hey, we're down to 40 minutes of ball. We're not going to worry about the sight lines. We're going to worry about let's control what we control, and that's how hard we play, how we handle adversity, all right, how much we stay together. So you really don't get into that, because the more you make that a factor and bring it into the attention of your players, I think the more it gets in their heads. So you're really empowering your guys this time of year. You want to be mentally, emotionally, physically fresh, alert, and confident. You've got to really empower your guys and let them know, as long as we play hard and play together, all right, that's all that counts.
And lastly, fellas, we got this one for both of you. It's from Scott Mooney. He's at Scott Drop and Roll. And he says, with Frankamp transferring from Kansas to Wichita State and Ojale transferring from Duke to SMU. What do you think of transferring to a lesser program, quote-unquote, for a bigger role with the squad?
Right. Well, I mean, those are great examples of maximizing your abilities. And, you know, Seth knows this better than I do. I mean, a lot of it is what's a better fit. Now, Frank Camp was a little bit of a different situation at Kansas. And look, we're seeing this at Duke where, you know, Marquise Bolden may be out. And so, you know, he may be going a step down. And it happens, you know, that where the fit isn't there for them at the high level. And why not be productive somewhere else if that's what you want?
Players transfer for playing time and role, plain and simple. And if a player is not playing, they're going to seek out a situation where they feel that they're going to have a greater opportunity to play to their strengths, where they're going to, quote unquote, let them play their game. They can embrace the role they want. All right. And there is going to be an opportunity, because that's the whole key. You know, kids select schools, but if there's not an opportunity, why do they expect they're going to play? If there's a McDonald's All-American in front of you, or if there's a guy that averaged 15 or 17 points in front of you, you know that coming in. You're not beating that dude out. But when you transfer, I would think you've been through it once. Now you're looking for a school that fits your style of play and also gives you that opportunity. And that's what those two players have done. And then you have to put in the work. Because just because you're transferring, there's also a ton of transfers that fail. All right, so you've got to put it on yourself then to work on your game, be a great teammate, listen and hear your coaches, and buy in. And those are two examples of two kids that did that and have made good decisions in terms of the schools they transferred to and have had great success.
All right, guys, we have one more podcast to go before our off-season begins, so make sure you're a part of it by tweeting at us your questions, your comments, and just make sure you use the hashtag student section.
And Josh, where can they find our podcast?
They can find our podcast any number of places, Andy. The better question is, where can't they find it? iTunes, etc. But the best place to find it is in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. If you subscribe there, you get alerts, you get notifications every single time a podcast is published. So you're really in the inner circle of trust when you subscribe in the ESPN app.
And throughout the course of today, for great pithy thoughts and other things, follow Seth at Seth on Hoops. Follow me at ESPN Andy Katz. Thanks for listening and enjoy the national championship game tonight.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Katz and Coach G.